One in three adults in Wisconsin is considered obese, according to the most recent data from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. For children in the state, the obesity rate is just under 14%. Obesity can increase a person's risk for high blood pressure, stroke, heart disease, and various other medical issues. Experts say that obesity is also associated with worse COVID-19 outcomes due to a person's weakened immune response. Support for this broadcast comes from the Donovan E. Rasmussen Broadcast Journalism Fellowship at the University of Wisconsin-River Falls. This is Brooke Shepherd reporting. Obesity in the United States has tripled since 1975, according to the World Health Organization. Though in recent years, the obesity rate plateaued in Wisconsin, the long-term trends show it growing. In this report, we will look at what the experts think will happen to obesity rates since the pandemic, discussing the barriers the consumer now faces and why obesity is so prevalent. Finally, we will talk about stigma and solutions. The experts are Kristen Miller, a dietitian with Health Partners in Hudson, Barry Popkin, a world-renowned obesity expert and professor of nutrition at the University of North Carolina, Beth Olson, an associate professor and extension specialist in the Nutritional Science Department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Greg Miller, a family physician in River Falls. Our first expert is A.Z. Snyder, a public health official for Pierce County. Snyder has been with Pierce County for over 3 years. She says that trends in obesity for Western Wisconsin are almost the same as national averages.
Our population is divided into thirds. So about a third of people are of a healthy BMI, a third of people are overweight, and a third of people are classified as obese. So it's very, very similar in all those jurisdictions. For Pierce County, 35% of our population is overweight and 32% is obese, which is very close to the state and county numbers as well. We've definitely seen for all three of those jurisdictions, national, state, and Pierce County, we've seen obesity increase in the past decade plus. In 2004, our obesity rate in the U.S., Wisconsin, and in Pierce County was 24%, and now it's 32% in Pierce County. So we have seen a steady increase in those numbers.
Snyder refers to BMI, or Body Mass Index. This is commonly used to classify overweight and obese individuals. A calculation is done comparing a person's height and weight. Anyone scoring over 30 is considered obese, and anything between 25 and 29.9 is overweight. Though Snyder does say that this is just a screening tool and not a diagnosis, since BMI is not always 100% accurate. Barry Popkin is an obesity researcher who founded the Division of Nutrition Epidemiology at the University of North Carolina. He later established and led the UNC Interdisciplinary Obesity Center. He says that obesity can lead to many complications and has been affecting the military and all labor forces. He also mentions its connection with non-communicable diseases, or NCDs.
What we know from an array of different studies is that its impact on the health system is profound. Its increases in health insurance very much relate to nutrition-related NCDs like diabetes, hypertension, 13 of the 15 cancers, and many other aspects of NCDs. So the impact is profound on our economy in terms of productivity. It's also profound in its impacts on the military. They're having trouble finding healthy people to recruit, and once they get in, they're having trouble, great difficulty keeping their troops fit because of the weight gains.
The coronavirus outbreak had to become a focal point of the Pierce County Public Health Department. Obesity and other pressing topics were put on hold temporarily.
The pandemic has definitely overwhelmed the capacity of local health departments, but it certainly hasn't stopped our focus on our really vital areas of the health of the public. So we are still in partnership with Healthier Together, which is our community health improvement coalition, focusing on mental health, substance use disorder, and then we've kind of wrapped obesity into those, acknowledging that obesity is very much related to mental health and family stability.
Studies have shown that people with obesity are more likely to become seriously ill after contracting the coronavirus. Snyder says this is true for all age groups, even young people.
So people who are obese, even if they're younger, are much more likely than people who are in normal weight to be hospitalized for COVID-19. We also know that obesity really disproportionately impacts members of certain racial and ethnic minority populations. So that also lets us know that those people from those populations, if they are obese, which they're more likely to be, are at increased risk for poor outcomes due to COVID-19. Anecdotally and kind of logically, we know that probably the pandemic has increased obesity, but to be honest, it's too early for us to have real good quality quantitative evidence of that. The pandemic is not over yet. It does make sense that in a pandemic where people are stressed out, they might be at home more, which I don't know about you, but when I'm at home, I snack all day.
Obesity and overweight were named COVID risk factors by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. Popkin says obesity causes people to be immune compromised due to the added weight on their bodies. In addition, the studies that have been done so far are finding obesity rates are rising since the start of the pandemic.
There is more research than you could imagine. And clearly, not only in the U.S., but in Italy, France, with studies in low and middle income countries, we know overweight and obesity has increased across the board. We also know, of course, in many countries, including our own, that food insecurity has gone up. But overweight and obesity have gone up. I would estimate in the U.S. by an average between 5 and 12 pounds. We don't have the exact data, but we have data like that from a number of small studies in other countries.
Kristen Miller is a dietitian from the Hudson Hospital and Clinic in St. Croix County. She has been a dietitian for almost 14 years. Miller says it's hard to make specific conclusions about how much obesity has gone up due to the pandemic. She has seen mixed results in her own patients.
I think as a whole, in patients that I've been seeing, working with on both outpatient and inpatient side, they've been reporting weight gain. A lot of patients have, in a variety of I've gained a couple pounds, or a lot of people are like the freshman 15 of college, they've gained the COVID-19 of the pandemic and talked about that as well. So I think it kind of varies. Kind of the other side, I have had some patients, which is really interesting, actually talk about some healthier habits that they've made during the pandemic and that they've actually lost weight, which was kind of interesting to me. Maybe because they were going out regularly with friends for coffee or out to eat. And by cutting out those behaviors of not eating out as much, they actually had some weight loss going on.
In a recent study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, it was found that higher daily step count, regardless of how much someone walks, is associated with lower mortality risks for all causes.
One of the biggest things that I see is just working more from home for a lot of us. And I know for myself, even personally, when we were working from home, you just didn't move as much because I went from my bedroom to my kitchen table, maybe to the bathroom, and that's all a matter of not very many steps versus when you're at work, you're constantly on your feet moving to see patients. And I think that can be true for a lot of people, is that they're just more active at work. They're walking into the office, instead of sitting at their desk emailing or messaging people, they're getting up and talking to those people. Or even when we think about lunch breaks, that maybe we're going to a cafeteria and we're eating with someone, and then when we're at home, we tend to snack more mindlessly.
Miller says that stress eating is also happening a lot, as many people felt they had little control over what was going on in their environment.
Food was one thing that we could kind of control over and make choices with. And so I think for a lot of people that led to some unhealthy choices, maybe increase in snacking or in the timing of snacking, or maybe increase in sweets, because I think a lot of us tend to go towards those things as comfort kind of foods too. Kind of along with that, I think a lot of people use fitness centers to go to work out at. And I think with those being closed, or I know during the higher rates of COVID-19 and the pandemic, a lot of people or fitness centers were requiring masks. And I think that really hampered people from wanting to go and work out at fitness centers, having to be masked. They perceived that as being difficult for them. And so then maybe they chose not to work out, or on the same timeline, a lot of fitness centers were closed during the pandemic. So if that was their outlet for physical activity, that was eliminated.
In children, obesity is associated with heart problems, physiological effects, and many other issues. During the pandemic, children faced uncertainties and stress, with their screen time going up and their time to be physically active going down. They no longer left home much, and in many cases, found new challenges. Beth Olson is an associate professor of nutrition at UW-Madison. She says the pandemic's impact on rates of childhood obesity is not yet known.
I've seen a couple of small reports where, for instance, in a clinic where they feel that they are seeing children, you know, 1 year to the next year that they're seeing are at a higher percentile than they were, suggesting that there's been weight gain. I think what many are suggesting is some of the things that contribute to weight gain, excessive weight gain in children, happened during COVID. So being out of school, for instance, there is sometimes more weight gain in the summer when children are out of school. So being out of school where they may lack structured activity, as in physical education classes, they may lack some opportunity for just unstructured play, like for smaller children, recesses, playground equipment, other kids to play with. And the other thing is our schools provide many, many, many children with healthy breakfasts and healthy lunches.
Olson says the working from home environment can lead to issues for many children when it comes to weight.
The concern that there were more children spending time on screens, if you think, you know, if you're doing online schooling for some significant amount of time, you're not walking back and forth to your classes or among classes, say in a high school, you're sitting between your classes, perhaps. Children maybe being on their screens later at night, just more in general. And then not just for children, but adults working at home, having more access to food all the time. So a kitchen there with food in it, as opposed to being in your classroom where there wouldn't be that kind of temptation or a way of coping with boredom, perhaps by eating, you know, going to the kitchen to get food to eat.
A 2019 report from the American Academy of Pediatrics found that children age 8 to 12 spend an average of 4 to 5 hours a day on screens, while teens age 13 to 18 spend 6.5 hours a day. The pandemic only increased the need for digital tools.
I don't think we'll have a good handle on it for a while yet, because to kind of get a good handle, we do nationwide surveys, and those, it takes some time to do that. And then we do comparisons over time, because of course every child that's growing normally would be gaining weight. So you can't just look at weight gain. Because a child is growing, they're going to gain weight. So we really need to look at how does it compare to previous years of children at that same age.
Olson says things have changed since she started in the field. In the past, children weren't considered to be overweight or obese, since the thought was they'd grow into their bodies.
But over time, we found children were becoming so overweight and obese that we were running out of time for them to grow into it. In other words, they were starting to hit weights that they should have been as adults. Overweight and obesity tends to track, so it's not inevitable that a child who is heavier is going to be a heavier adult, but it is more likely. And the ramifications on health, being overweight and obese, that we used to see more often in adulthood, things like sleep apnea, which do predispose people to heart disease, heart problems, high blood lipids that contribute to heart disease, cancers, those kind of things, are showing up in childhood. Children with abnormal blood lipids, children with sleep apnea, those kind of risk factors, also type 2 diabetes. This was a disease we used to call adult onset because it was more likely to happen when you were older, and we've renamed it to type 2 because now it's happening to children, and a significant factor in that is overweight or obesity.
Olson says that if there were more programs available community-wide, parents could have access to more support and advice. She says preventing obesity in children can start during pregnancy.
If we can get support when they're pregnant and continuing to breastfeed, breastfed babies tend to have better weight outcomes. That's, again, not an absolute. Plenty of babies who have fed formula who have been healthy and have good weights, but that's a start. And then a concept which isn't always easy to grasp, and so people need help on the steps along the way, is something we call responsive feeding, which is we feel that babies are born with a good sense of when they're hungry and a good sense of when they're full. And if they are offered healthy foods, you know, breastfed, or if they are formula fed, if mom or caregiver holds the bottle and watches the baby's responses, but then also when they move on to solid foods, if they're offered those foods and allowed to eat them, and then when they decide they're done eating, we stop feeding them, they're more likely to develop eating which is driven by hunger and fullness and not other things.
So why are obesity rates continuing to rise? Popkin says the food industry is partly to blame.
Our food supply has really pushed the kind of unhealthy, highly processed foods and beverages, the fast foods and other kinds of things we take in, as well as all the ready-to-heat, ready-to-eat foods that we buy in grocery stores. Cooking, in the average in the U.S., I don't know data exactly for Wisconsin, but I wouldn't think it's that different. People spend 30 to 40 minutes on the average in food preparation a day. That's the average. Now, of course, there are some people that cook and stuff and eat real food like I do, but on the average, that's really what we are doing today. We've shifted in every aspect of how we think about food and how we eat it and prepare it.
St. Croix and Pierce County were top ranked in the state for health outcomes in 2020, according to the Wisconsin County Health Ranking Report. Snyder says that even in economically stable areas, there are other factors that contribute to obesity.
There's no doubt Pierce and St. Croix County are among the healthiest counties in the state, and that is very much due to our very strong socioeconomic standing as counties. That's no question about that. I wouldn't say our obesity rate is so high compared to poorer communities, so I wouldn't say that. I would say, however, that, for instance, Pierce County is a very commuting county, so I believe we have the highest rate of people who leave the county to go to work every day of any county in Wisconsin. That's the last time I checked. It's been a couple years since I looked at that data. When we commute like that, there's less time that we have to be physically active in our communities and to go to the gym and to go for a walk because you're spending time in your vehicle. So that could potentially be a reason why Pierce County specifically might not have the physical activity opportunities that other communities might have.
The U.S. spends $3.8 trillion a year on healthcare, according to the federal government's Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Data shows that the U.S. spends more per capita than any other industrialized nation, and yet better health outcomes are not obtained, according to a report by the Hamilton Project.
If we had a different kind of health insurance that focused on wellness rather than treatment of illness, and it would be different. But we have an enormous array of doctors even who are making a lot of money by treating all the consequences of obesity. We're in a very complex situation. We need to act. Other countries, gosh, the United Kingdom put in a series of taxes on sugar and beverages, putting in a marketing ban, going to put warning labels on food. They're doing lots of things to deal with the unhealthy food, get it out of their country. And this happened after Boris Johnson was at high risk of death, just like Donald Trump was, although he didn't admit it, from COVID plus his obesity.
Popkin says in the U.S., many politicians are profiting off of the sugary beverage and food industry, making it a layered issue to address. In the medical community, there has been much debate on the growing interest in collecting data as a way of assessing treatment outcomes. With all this pushback from billion-dollar industries, one might wonder if there is any way to combat obesity. And there is. Kristen Miller says that Health Partners offers a variety of classes for patients to aid with losing weight.
We have one called Healthy Weight for Life, and that's like a little shorter period class, a three-part class, which is a really nice option for people. But we also offer one called Life Steps, and that's a year-long class taught by a nutrition professional or a dietitian like myself. And we work with the group of individuals over the course of a year to help them to achieve long-term weight loss. And that goal of working together with not only their other classmates, but also having the support of a dietitian through that class is so beneficial for them. And when we're talking about weight loss, like I had said, we're talking about long-term behavior changes. And so that Life Steps class really speaks to that because it is for that whole year. And it's really about teaching people those small behavior changes that we can do to really make good long-term health changes for our body.
There are many things people can do at the individual level to stay healthy, though Snyder says we also need to look at larger scale solutions.
I think much of past interventions around the country related to obesity really very much focus on single individuals and their own behavior. And we've come to realize as a public health community that obesity is very much related to the environment in which people live. So what the evidence is telling us that the solution to population-wide obesity, which is definitely what we're looking at in the United States, is making the healthy choice the easy choice. And that's all about that environment.
Snyder says the community could build the environment that supports access to quality and affordable food by adding more grocery stores and incentivizing the stores to carry healthy options.
How do we make sure that our communities are built in a way where there is access to safe and easy physical activity? So if you live in a neighborhood where, you know, there's glass all over the street from broken windows and beer bottles, and you're not quite sure if it's going to be safe to go out there for a run, you're not going to go out there and go for a run. You're not going to go to the park and play. But if we live in communities where we know we have safe green spaces that are right for exercise, people are going to get out there and be physically active. So it's really about that community investment. Now, that's a tough intervention to implement. That's expensive. It involves a lot of partners that maybe traditionally we wouldn't have thought of as being partners in combating obesity. But that is the case these days, that public safety, public works, parks and rec, our municipalities, they are our key partners for public health to really increase access to physical activity and nutritious food.
In Pierce County, Snyder says that the hospitals in the area have started building walking trails around them.
There's a group in Ellsworth that's working on kind of beautifying Main Street in downtown to make it a place where people want to walk around and be outside and be active. There are summer fun events coming up in Ellsworth that are really promoting the physical activity and social connectedness. So yeah, that stuff is definitely happening. I wouldn't say that we've necessarily gotten to the place where we're doing built environment assessments to understand in all of our communities where there might be some issues with access to healthy food and safe physical activity opportunities, but I think we're headed in that direction.
Popkin says what the U.S. needs is federal attention on combating obesity. He suggests adding warning labels to certain foods and modifying the marketing of unhealthy foods to children.
We can get the schools to not allow at any level sugary beverages or marketing of any kind or sales of any kind of junk food. We can have schools provide and ban ultra-processed food from schools. Right now, we have huge companies like Marriott and others going in and providing for schools centralized, highly processed food. Give them pizza and stuff weekly or less often, but they give them all sorts of highly processed food instead of real food cooked in schools like we used to have. So maybe we need to come back to school kitchen.
Popkin has helped pass legislation in many countries to change marketing and put more barriers in place for unhealthy choices. In Chile, Popkin's colleagues passed a marketing ban on all media going to children for products that were unhealthy, containing high amounts of added sugar, sodium, and saturated fats. Kids weren't even allowed to bring these types of foods into school. Popkin says Chile was the highest sugary beverage consumer in the world.
The reduction was, for example, in just the first year with the least stringent cutoff for the warning label foods, they saw a 24.7% reduction in sugar beverage consumption per capita. They saw large declines in ads going to kids. They saw the ads moving to parents show the kids saw, so they then increased the ban from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on any ads anywhere, billboards, etc., being seen.
Popkin says the United Kingdom is also planning on taking similar measures.
They just are trying very hard to use a set of mutually reinforcing laws. The warning labels then are used for schools as well as on every product you buy in a supermarket. They also don't allow you to advertise. They're now considering a tax on all these foods and beverages. So they're trying to get rid of the highly processed food, which now dozens of studies, several very sophisticated NIH and others controlled trials have shown have produced a huge increase in weight, a huge risk on all of our heart conditions and several cancers, as well as total mortality, heart disease mortality, and cancer mortality. So We've got to get these foods on our diet. And today, 70% of what children in America eat is junk food, literally. 65-70% of what adults eat is also. We are really a society consuming unhealthy food, and food is killing us.
Greg Miller is a family physician in River Falls, Wisconsin. Dr. Miller has been practicing for over 2 decades and has worked with many patients with obesity. Miller says that there are a lot of fad diets that people often can follow to lose weight. But he says people must find something that will work long term.
Everybody's done something different. There's diets out there. Do I do the high carb, low carb, high fat, low fat, high protein? I don't care what you do. Do something that you can do and that you can sustain. You need to focus on a healthy lifestyle because, like we said before, if you don't learn what got you obese, you're never going to become not obese.
Dr. Miller says the most important thing he can do in medicine is help people lose weight. The National Weight Control Registry is a long-term research project based at Brown Medical School in Rhode Island. It has over 10,000 members and tracks people's weight loss. 98% of registry participants reported that they modified their food intake in some way to lose weight. The NWCR says that long-term weight loss maintenance is possible and requires sustained changes to a person's behavior. Another layer to the issue of obesity is something called obesity stigma. According to the World Health Organization, the stigma involves exclusion and marginalization that leads to inequities. People who are overweight may face discrimination in the workplace or school setting. Popkin says often people don't look at the bigger picture and instead judge others.
It's a very difficult issue in our society. Young children are pointed out and made fun of if they're too heavy. Adults that are very overweight, the severely overweight and obese adults, are looked at poorly, and they feel it. They feel the stigma. We have to think of individuals' obesity as a function and created by our horrible environment, which is shows food wherever you move. It sells at every place. It's easy. It's seductive. It's highly palatable. It's not real food. It's these really chemical and plant-like kind of foods that are not fully real foods, even though we think they are. Be shocked how many chemicals and smells and additives are added to what Americans eat. Yes, it's a problem for individuals with obesity, particularly with severe obesity. But I don't look at it as their cause. I don't look at it as because they're lazy. I look at it as what society has done with our children increasingly becoming overweight and obese and then being sent off to a life of that.
Dietitian Kristen Miller says there are many instances where people with obesity may feel the stigma.
I have heard that some patients that I work with that going to like a fitness center can be a struggle for them because it's intimidating. There's people there that maybe are considered what they would consider more fit or at a lower BMI that they would think would be healthier. And kind of getting over that hurdle of starting some kind of physical fitness can be hard for a lot of people.
The pandemic may have contributed to the issue of obesity in Western Wisconsin. Experts also found that those who already struggled with obesity were more likely to have poor health outcomes from COVID. The reason for this growing problem is complex and will take many resources to remedy the situation. Popkin says obesity is a slow killer.
Obesity doesn't kill like cancer. It debilitates you. So it raises the cost for industry. People are reduced productivity at work. They have higher absenteeism. They get disabled more quickly. And they retire quicker. And it increases our costs for nursing homes and other things. So there's many reasons why we should move on this problem. But it really takes a government focus. And right now our focus is on getting our economy moving and dealing with a lot of other existential crises like climate change.
For more background on the problem of obesity in the United States, visit the website of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention at cdc.gov/obesity. This has been a production of the Department of Communications and Media Studies at the University of Wisconsin-River Falls. Reporting has been supported by the Donovan E. Rasmussen Broadcast Journalism Fellowship. The music is Fresh Lift by Shane Ivers. I'm Brooke Shepherd. Thank you for listening.